388 of the Survival Podcast. Today's show is called The Path of Liberty for Those Who Choose It. You know, I've said many times that we are living in the midst of an empire's collapse. I've probably been phrasing it that way for a good 4 to 5 years at this point, definitely pre-COVID. So somewhere in 2019 or earlier is probably the first time that I started talking about it in those terms. The thing is, we have no real way to know how long such a collapse will take to occur, to play out, and to evolve into its next phase, or whatever that looks like, whether it's the United States as separate entities, you know, breakup USSR style, or a reconstitution of the current system in some way, in America looking geographically the same, but drastically different. We don't know. How long could it take? Well, if you asked somebody that about the Soviet Union in 1984, they would have told you decades, and they would have been wrong. The decade that we were in wouldn't have ended before the collapse came. So it could be 5 years. It also could be decades. The United States as a nation is far more resilient in many ways than the Soviet Union was, from a resource standpoint and from a deep state standpoint, far more resilient. So it could be decades. It could be a century. I don't think so, but it could be. It took about 300 years from the beginning of the fall of the Roman Empire for it not to be an empire at all anymore. We really don't know. Here's what we do know. The current system is broken and can't be redeemed. And we don't know that because we're really smart and we've analyzed the current system. We know that because that's how government works. That every empire that ever existed eventually crumbled and collapsed. Every single one. And they do because the structure of the systems themselves are built to prevent redemption and reform. Our founders did give us a system that was unique and had more potential for that than any other system that's probably been given to any other group of people, at least as a form of state government, right? Like, the actual system of constitutional government in the United States is not perfect, but in the right hands with the right people, it could have been a much longer experiment. But history has shown that empires collapse because when you give anybody power, they become addicted to power. And then they seek power, and they seek more power and more power. The more they obtain, the more addicted to that power they become. And you end up with Cornell's Iron Law bureaucracy, and the people that actually run the show in the government are not dedicated to the mission that the government is supposed to see to, which is the good of the people. They are dedicated to the organization itself, i.e. the federal government of the country. And their only means by which to achieve that is to hold on to what power they have and always seek just a little bit more. And when you have that system, what's going to happen is as problems come in and begin to cripple and rot your empire. As I said yesterday, what happens is your empire will begin to rot on the periphery first, your control of your vassals, and then the people within the empire, as they stop seeing the benefit of being an empire, begin to divide. And they don't divide in the classic division of the fascist state or the communist state where it's leverageable and usable. That'll be the beginning of it. But as it begins to really part and you lose any unification where everybody within the home ground of the empire is like, woohoo, we are something, whatever that is. When that cohesion breaks, then the rot begins to rot from the middle out and the sides in, and the empire eventually collapses. And all while this is going on, a historian will be able to look back at any civilization that's ever happened to and say, here's 10 things these people could have done that they had all the money, all the power, and all the resources to do. And they might still be here today had they done these, you know, 5, 10, 6, 8, 18 things, whatever it is. And a historian looking at it, it's so obvious. You know why? Because that historian is objective because they have no emotional attachment to something that happened 1,000 years ago. right? They're just like, here's what happened. And like, look, here's where they fucked the water supply up, and here's how they could have fixed it. Here's how they deforested everything, and here's how they could have fixed it. But they don't do it. And they never do it. And they never do it. It's never happened. When you get to this state, it always eventually collapses. So we know what we don't know. And that is exactly what collapse will look like, how long it'll take, and what comes next. But here's what we do know, what we can do about it, how we can live free as possible while this goes on around us, so that our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren may know liberty and freedom. And we know that to do that, we have to focus on the things that we actually control. We have to have an ability to face what's coming, which is economic, social, and political decline. So how do we do that? That's what we're going to talk about today. And we will get into this in just a moment after we take care of our sponsors of the day. And we'll go into the five primary means of control in the modern age. And I'll give you the bullet point list of that right now before we do our sponsors. That is money, dependence, and I mean dependence on third parties, education, regulation, and false faith. And they all, as you will see, hinge one upon each other for collective control. And if we can address those things, there's other things too, but if we can address those, we can figure everything else out to live as free as possible in the world that we watch decline around us, while others choose a path that I would call basically safety through tyranny. People literally run to the security of tyranny at a time when they should most seek liberty. It's a weird human dynamic. Go along, get along, that type of thing. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and remind you about our sponsors today. And I get to actually have some coffee during our sponsor segments today because both of our sponsors today have video content I can just play for you. So let's start off with the Exit and Build Land Summit in Bastrop, Texas. And remember, you can virtually attend this for free as well. So you can go to the site and sign up, and you can get access to most of the presentations and speakers online in a Zoom-like meeting. Or if you want to be with the cool kids and come hang out with us, come on down to Bastrop.
The entire system, government, mega corporations, the media is basically a big fraud. After COVID, this plandemic, a lot of people woke up. They pushed too hard and caused a lot of people to start questioning the status quo. We decided, let's put together an event, bringing together people that want to homestead, that want to build community, but don't know how or don't believe in their ability to do so.
We have the hippies and the lefties, and then we have the Ron Paul libertarians and the Rothbardian and the anarchists.
This homesteading, regenerative agriculture, permaculture, living together, buying land cooperatively, that is the new path forward.
It's brought together people from all walks of life, and that's what's so beautiful is that when you come together for a purpose like this, it unites everyone rather than divides everyone.
Don't just oppose something, rather stand for something.
The Exit and Build Land Summit has been awesome, and I would say to anybody out there who's considering doing this next year, do it. You won't be disappointed.
So real quick, guys, I just want to throw in again, you can attend virtually at no cost whatsoever, and all you got to do is go over to the link. There is a link in the video notes below. There's definitely going to be a link in the audio notes for today as well. There's a banner on my website, thesurvivalpodcast.com, and you can sign up for free there. But do consider coming on down and getting to actually talk to us and be with us and hang out, because the networking is a huge value. And I really recommend that you consider getting yourself a VIP pass. The VIP dinner alone, the people you get to rub elbows with and talk to, freaking cool. And a big announcement that just came out today, I think. I didn't hear about it till today. J.P. Sears will be performing at Exit and Build. So come on down and maybe, you know, get to meet JP. He's a really cool dude. And his performances are awesome. He's actually way better kind of doing his stand-up shtick with the liberty infused into it, in my opinion. than just watching his YouTube videos and stuff like that. He was really great a couple years ago when they had him there. Anyway, next up, Start 9, Embassy Servers.
We all save our data, but where is it saved? In the cloud, which is actually this building in one of these computers with millions of others. This is called a honeypot. A single place, full of data, worth a hacker's time to steal. But instead, if you saved your data on your own computer at home, you wouldn't be worth the attack. Saving your own data is easy. Simply plug in a Start9 device and start saving all your own data today. So, will you stay in the honeypot? Or will you take control of your data? Start now. Start9.
You know, and the one thing I always want to point out when I talk about Start9 is I think it's one of those things that people look at and go, it's too technical, it's too hard, I'm not going to be able to do this. If you can use a smartphone, you can use a Start9 server. About the only exception to that that will require some additional specialized knowledge to be able to really use it is if you want to run a Bitcoin Lightning node. And, you know, no matter how you do that, you're going to have that learning curve anyway. All the rest of the cool shit Start9 does, I mean, literally anybody can do it. Put it in, follow the directions, download stuff from their app store, basically. And, you know, you could have end-to-end encrypted messaging with people that you let into your network only. It's like military grade, unbreakable, tomorrow morning with a Start9 server. It's that easy. And the people in your family that don't know anything about it, again, all they have to do is install an app. You let them in, and then you've got that. And there's a lot of other really cool things that you can do. And you can access your files over encryption anywhere in the world without relying on somebody else and having a dependency on a third party, which you're about to see is one of the mechanisms of control that they have over us today. So with that, let's dig on into it and talk about what we can do to basically take a path of liberty when the majority of people are not going to do it. Liberty and freedom are dog whistle words for the majority of society. They're not real. When you tell somebody, you know, do you support freedom and liberty? They say yes. And as soon as you say, well, then should somebody be able to do this thing over here that they don't approve of, even if it doesn't hurt somebody else, they'll come up with why that can't be allowed. And so right there, they've already opted out of liberty and freedom. What most people say with liberty and freedom is, well, as long as it's the things that I approve of, then it's okay. It takes a person that is comfortable, very comfortable with themselves, very confident in themselves to say, this other person is free to engage in this behavior that I choose not to engage in, as long as they're not harming anyone else. That's actual liberty, and most people will not take that path. We're about to go through severe economic and social repercussions due to, you know, about 50 years of the stupidest living that any advanced society has ever done. And it all hinges on our decision in 1971 under Nixon to temporarily suspend the gold standard. We had already taken a huge dive in 1913, then in 1933, then in 1964. But 71 was where the last resemblance of sanity was tethered and cut away. And everything has gone to shit since then. And I've talked about it. There's a site called What the Fuck Happened in 1971. And you can go through graph after graph after graph after graph of, you would say, well, you know, surely the number of administrators in education is not correlated to the decision to get rid of the gold standard. That, yes, it is. Because when you create cheap fake money, then you can just have anything you want. So then regulators start thinking about how to regulate things, and they start adding regulation. And now the regulation has to be overseen by somebody. And next thing you know, a company with 25 people has a Karen in HR. They don't even need a freaking HR department, but they have one. And, you know, over a certain number, they'll be pretty much one way or another mandated to have one. And this, again, it all goes back to that point. And as this begins to unravel, as we collectively wake up from the insanity and the stupidity that we've done, slowly the realization of what it means is becoming evident to people, that this can't go on forever, that there's a consequence to this, that we can't just keep doing this forever, that the can has been kicked and kicked and kicked, and maybe there's a couple more kicks in it, but we're going to run out of kicks. So everybody starts clamoring for what they want, and they all say it's about freedom and liberty and independence and a better world and blah, 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 But when you tell a climate change activist, for instance, hey, look, there's solutions to your problem, they don't want that. They want communism. That's what they really want. They want communism. Now, why do they want communism? Do you think they know they want communism? Some of them do know that they want communism. Most of them think they want more equity and fairness for everybody, which sounds so wonderful. That's how you sell a bad idea with pretty words. And so naturally, as the things that are most important to them begin to fall away, anything that promises they can keep some of it, they'll grab onto it. That's how you lead people from the concept of liberty to begging for tyranny. As long as it's a tyranny that I approve of, it's okay. The shit that's going on, you know, this is not a defense of Trump as an overall thing. But what's going on right now with Donald Trump in the political system and all these prosecutions is lawfare. And here's the reality, and this is the sick reality of it. This is being done by the left. If the right were in power and Trump had been a Democrat, right, and the exact same thing was going on in reverse, the right in general would be okay with it, and the left would say it's abhorrent because it's tribal. And that's how tyranny always works. As long as my side's in control, I'm okay with anything. And this is always leads to absolute dystopian shitholes for places that were once great. And one of the big things they do with history is they deny the greatness of the empire before it fell. Maybe they'll talk about the statues they built or something. But they'll deny how great it actually was to be a citizen of one of these empires. Everybody was a slave or some stupid shit like that. That doesn't work. Slavery's wrong. Did exist in most of these empires because at the time it existed pretty much everywhere in the world. But overall, society was better if you were a Roman during the height of the Roman Republic than it was, let's say, in the hinterlands outside of it. It was. And then they destroyed themselves. And when you start destroying yourself, people start screaming to keep the things that matter to them. And so they will cling to tyranny while spouting the word liberty. And that's what's coming. Now, how do we do this? Again, money. Money is the number one way of controlling people, and money is directly correlated to your primary expenses in life. And so tell me, is there anyone out there that at a time in your life you didn't have a reserve of money, you had a job you hated, and you didn't think, I'll quit, but you didn't because I need the money. We've all been there. And if it can keep you working a job you hate, then what can't it do? What can't it do? Money is both a means of control by keeping you somewhere and leading you somewhere. We've all seen the cartoons and different things, little political cartoons and all, where the guy chases money his whole life. And when he's old, he finally has a bunch of money. He's standing at the edge of a cliff. It's the end of his life. He's ready to go in the grave. And it just kept you moving through the maze long enough to get you so it can lead you and hold you. Dependence. Having the third party control something you need or want access to, which can be your money. It can be your money you haven't earned yet, so it's an employer, right? It can be a government subsidy or handout or welfare program. If you don't do what we say, we'll take it away. It's been used throughout history, way older than you think it is. There was plenty of welfare at the height of the Roman Empire. It was part of what led to its collapse. And it wasn't for people that were poor and didn't work. It was for everybody. Everybody got a daily ration of grain, right? Like, and that became something that after a certain number of generations, well, where's my grain, bitch? It is. I don't have to pay for grain. That's part of my right as a Roman citizen. How many things like that analogously are there to society today in America? But dependence is also things like the money you already earned that's in your bank account. Be a bad boy and we'll lock you out of your bank account, right? You're a merchant. You sell something. If you sell this thing that we don't like, we will turn off your merchant account. How many other forms of access? Access to health care, right? That's another thing. Next is education. And education is being taught from an early age to comply and not question authority. That's not what it should be, but that's what it is. And here's what I mean by that. Give me a person with a 100 IQ who will comply and obey and do everything that they're told, and I will show you somebody with a 4.0 GPA when they get out of high school. Now, they may not be taking AP calculus, right, and AP physics, and like the most advanced, most difficult path through that high school curriculum, but they'll take, you know, their algebra, geometry, algebra 2, and calc or trig and get A's in everything. Not because they're smart, because they comply and do everything they're told the way that they're told to do it. They'll be procedural. They'll obey. You got it? That's all. So we have a system that educates people that the best thing you can do for your own good is to do what you're told without questioning authority. And while you're in their fake little education bubble, it seems to be true. Because even if you're like me and you're a rebel, you do notice, hey, this guy over here that's basically little bit smarter than a box of rocks, he's getting better grades than me in geometry because he really cares about obeying and doing the thing the right way. And I don't give a shit, right? So I'm sitting here getting a B. He's getting an A. He works really hard for his A. I barely show up and get my B because that's good enough for me, right? But even when you're in that state, and even when you've consciously made that decision as a young person, you do observe that the people that obey get rewarded. That's what education is. Education has gone more to training than teaching. And training has a place. There's a value in being trained, but you should know the difference. Training is conditioning an organism, so it has to respond the way that you want it to respond under certain stimuli. I can train a tree. I can train a tomato plant. I can't teach a tree. I can't teach a tomato plant. I can teach a person or train a person. And again, training is the conditioning of the organism to respond the way that you wish for it to respond. Like, I ring a bell, you go to the other room and get there in 4 minutes flat or you're in trouble. That's compliance. So that when you go to work and they tell you to punch in and punch out, you'll do it the way that you're told. That system was designed to create that level of compliance. It just simply was, and it's a big part of the control today. And then we have regulation, which is being told you cannot do things or that you must do things. And this is very important. Much of our regulation is what I call soft regulation. In other words, there is no rule. There is no consequence other than if it was a good idea and you didn't do it, you missed an opportunity. But like no one will come arrest you or fine you or whatever. So many things that people act like that's the case about. Or you could, like, it is a hard regulation, but you could turn it into a soft regulation by a business structure or where you move, and people won't do it. They'll simply comply because, again, education is the partner, the sister of regulation. And then we have what we call false faith, which is what all four of those lead up to. False faith is the belief in a system that's not worthy of your faith in justice, equality, etc. So if you ask a person, especially the right is really subjective to this false faith. And when I say false faith here, if you're a religious person, just let that go. I'm not talking about your spiritual faith. I'm talking about the right is very manipulatable and controllable through the concept of magic words, right? There was an old Star Trek, the original series, the 60s stuff from like 66 to 69. And there was this planet where it was like a role reversal Earth mirror planet. And the savages were like all muscular white guys that were living like the Native Americans. And they actually had the American flag in this. It was so cheesy, but it was just, you know, it was a thing of its time. And somewhere in this, you know, the savages capture Kirk and Spock. And somewhere in it, Kirk says something like liberty or freedom. And like the head dude of the savages, right, says that's a worship word. That's a worship word. And that is actually really spot on to how the right can be controlled with words like liberty, freedom, the American dream, American exceptionalism, etc. It's all great ideas. It's all stuff that like really is good shit, except it's not true. We don't actually get what is promised. The purpose of the system is what it does, not what it claims to do. So what do we do about it? How do we handle it? Let's break them down individually. So let's start off with one of the biggest things that we need to do to take control of this isn't the direct corollary to the five things that I just gave you, but it absolutely hinges on money, dependence, and false faith, and that is your health. The third highest expense for most people is healthcare, including the cost of health insurance. including a lot of people that do not understand that they have that expense. Well, I don't pay for health insurance. It's employer provided. And people that say things like that are people who have never signed the front side of a paycheck. And I don't know, maybe you worked in a payroll department and they told you you could, push apply signature. I don't mean that. When I say actually sign the front side of a paycheck, it was your money that you'd have kept, except you hired the employee. You are actually an owner in the company. And when the profits are used to pay for employees, it is an expense to you directly. Doesn't mean the employee's not valuable. Doesn't mean they're not worth having, or otherwise you wouldn't keep them, right? But you understand that that bill, because that's what an employee is to you. It's a bill, right? It's a bill I have to pay every week, every 2 weeks, on the 1st and 15th, whatever. That's what an employee is to a private employer, not a government institution, right? And so I know that person has an expense. And I also know that person has a market value. And I know that I have to compete with competitive employers. Even if it's not a direct competitor with me, they're still a competitor for my employee. I need a marketing manager. I run a firm that makes blue widgets, right? You run a firm that makes, I don't know, dresses for turtles. It doesn't matter. We don't compete with each other. Blue widgets and turtle dresses are not competitive products. But if we both need a good marketing manager, I have to compete for the marketing managers that are available on the market. I want the best one I can get. So do you, to sell your turtle dresses. That's a really stupid idea. So you actually need them more than I do to come up with some bullshit that convince people to buy turtle dresses. So we have to compete for that person. We will have a budget with which to compete for that person with, and we will have certain conditions of employment to compete for that person with. And if you don't think, if my company, Blue Widgets Inc., provides full health insurance to my employees, that I'm not counting the cost of your healthcare in the salary that I'm offering you, then you're an idiot, and you're probably not going to make a good marketing manager either, because I most certainly am. So when you have employer-provided health insurance, if that would cost that employer, let's say, $500 a month, that's at least your $500. The reality is, since your employer will probably pay less than you, if that plan would cost you $750 a month, that's how much you're paying for insurance, because the money could be freed up and made available to you, right? So you need to understand how expensive health insurance really is, even if you don't pay the bill directly. You're still paying it. It's a lot like this. When people say stupid shit like, well, I don't want to own a property because if I own a house, I have to pay property tax on it. So that doesn't make any sense because I'm renting my own house from the government. And so I'm not going to pay property tax. I'm going to rent. Okay, you're renting from me. And you're acting like I didn't take my property tax expense, stick it in my spreadsheet to determine how much to charge you rent for. I'm not paying it, idiot. You are. And you have to start thinking this way. And if you can't think this way, then it's proof that the education system is flawed or works exactly as intended, depending on which angle you're coming at it from. Right? Okay. So diet is the most important and ignored aspect of human health that we have. Now, I'm not going to get on my carnivore keto soapbox with you. I'm just going to say, cook with one ingredient foods, make the food your fucking self, don't eat the seed oils, don't eat anything with high fructose corn syrup in it, and if you pick up a box and you're reading it, and it has a whole bunch of shit in there that doesn't make any sense, don't buy that and don't eat it. That's it. I think anybody can do that. You can be a vegan and you can do that. You can be a vegetarian. You can be a lacto-ovarian vegetarian. You can be a personal, I guess, what is it called, a pescivore, right? They'll eat fish but won't eat red meat or something like that. You can be a full-on carnivore. You can be anything in the dietary spectrum of choice and follow those rules. I would add to it, it's impossible probably to do if you're a vegan or maybe even a vegetarian, but you should not be getting more than 100 carbohydrates a day. Like, once you go over that for just about all people, you run into the risk of fucking up your metabolic health, which is where all the rest of your health stems from. And all of a sudden, you're experiencing autoimmune diseases and all these chronic conditions that were almost unheard of just 55, 60 years ago. So take control of your diet, because that's going to make your health expense less, and it will open up things for you. The healthier you get, the less expensive insuring your health for catastrophic problems is. Getting into most of the health shares and things like that, you have to be certain body size, weight, you know. A lot of times you have to have a physical that is far more intensive than a health insurance physical, things like that. And so that just drops the cost of everything. Now I have more money. Because it is one of the biggest expenses we have is healthcare. Exercise is necessary too. There's people say diet and exercise, and they never explain what that means. Or they're advertising these toxic ass GLP-1s, you know, Ozempic and all the knockoffs. People are paying $20,000 a year to literally wreck their bodies. That's what these drugs do. They wreck your freaking body. And they cost lots and lots of money unless it's under your insurance because you're a type 2 diabetic, which also wrecks your body even worse. Okay? We need exercise, though, and I don't care if you are in a gym pushing weights. I don't care if you're jogging. I don't care if you're walking. What I mean by exercise is you need daily physical activity sufficient to put some level of a burden on your body. Something that you at least hit some point at which I really don't want to do another 5 minutes, but I'm going to anyway. I really don't want to make the next lap, but I'll make one more lap. Something like that. Something that stresses your body physically to the point of having to do at least a little more than it wants to. Something that makes you sweat. Something that raises your heartbeat. You need this in your life. And I mean, you need it daily. I know there's dudes, they lift all the time and they lift 3 days a week. I'm not saying that person needs to lift 7 days a week. Stick with your lifting routine that works for you. On days that you're not lifting, take a walk, do something, go out in the garden and do some work. Physical work is exercise. The problem with people that rely on physical work as exercise and they get it through their job is when it's repetitive and the same over and over again, it leads to repetitive motion injuries and it doesn't do the most important thing exercise does. Exercise will never make up for a shitty diet. It will not make a person who eats garbage food into a physically healthy person, no matter how much. It might mitigate some of the damage, but it will never fix it. It is physical health is not the most important part of physical exercise. Mental health is. People that get physically active, put some level of extra requirement on their body, and do something and feel at the end of it they accomplish something, they are far more mentally healthy. Have you noticed, like, the left is notorious for having more mental illness than the right? What else is the left famous for? Being lethargic, right? Not exercising. Not only not exercising, there's plenty of fat-ass right-wing dudes, right? We see them all the time, big beer bellies and shit. But they at least value exercise. They don't shit on it. They're like, I know I should, but I'm busy working at the, you know, the factory or whatever, and I'm just tired. And they're fat because they're eating garbage food. But the left has actually become consciously objectionable to the concept of exercise. They literally write articles that say you're a white supremacist if you work out. Why? I don't know what, you know, I know why, but I'm not going to get into that today. But what, why do they get depressed? Because when your whole life has no real feeling of accomplishment and meaning, they might have jobs. I mean, a lot of people that are in that state, they have a job. They show up every day. They're never late. They never ask to leave early. They do. An employer's happy with them, but they know that their job's meaningless. And since they have nothing beyond that, they become depressed. And then they seek comfort in things like, oh, if we all just, you know, had universal health care, everything would be okay. Like, that's their problem. And then since they have no activity in their life, they become more and more depressed. And that's what leads so many of them to this weird obsession with transgenderism and all this other shit. They're looking for something to change the pain that they feel. They have a hole and they're trying to fill the hole with something, anything, political activism, some kind of weird ideology. It doesn't matter what. It's the same thing. If you have a hole in your heart, you will attempt to fill it. Physical activity is a way that you not only fill the hole, but then you stay mentally engaged enough to look around and see the things that actually you do want in your life and go get them instead of grabbing on anything that tries to make you feel a little bit better. Then you don't make deals with the devil. Then you don't seek the safety of tyranny, right? You actually seek the danger of liberty. Liberty's dangerous. It comes with no guarantees. You want to be completely taken care of, go to prison. You get universal health care, 3 meals a day. You get shelter over your head. Somebody, you know, as long as you're not in like one of the really bad prisons, right? You know, a white-collar prison, you're not going to get shanked. The guard's taking care of you. You'll be fine. You know, you don't want to go that far. Join the military. You'll get universal health care in the military. You'll get guaranteed housing in the military. You'll get a guaranteed meal in the military. And they'll pay you. But you won't have liberty. As a former soldier, I can tell you, you do not have liberty when you're in the military. They literally, they don't do this in the Army. Army, they call it leave. I think it's the Navy. They literally refer to it as liberty when you have a pass to go do what you want. So if you are granted liberty, what does it mean? It means you don't have it. Get outside. This is something else that a lot of the liberty movement, a lot of the right-wing movement, to be fair, a lot of people are beginning to realize, like, get out in the sun, right? All the way down to people that are, like, suntanning their balls or whatever. You don't have to go that far, but get outside. We were not, you know, whether you believe we were created or evolved, I don't care what you believe or some combination thereof, it didn't happen in a house. It didn't happen under fluorescent or LED lights. It didn't happen where we didn't have the exchange of oxygen with plants and animals. It didn't happen in a vacuum. It didn't happen where we were insulated from bacteria and viruses, which make up more of our body and genetics than human cells do. Get outside. That's also important for your mental awareness and your mental health. Why do you think they told you to stay inside during the COVID when getting outside was way more important and way more healthy of a choice for you? There was literally no risk of anything by going outside. They told you to stay inside. Absolutely asinine. But if you want to weaken a society to a state of control, keep them in their house and afraid. Fuck up their mental health. Their physical health will follow. I've had people tell me too, and this is the other side of this before we move on to the next segment. I have had people sit on my back porch with me who are overweight and out of shape, and I talk to them about diet, not because they're overweight and out of shape. I don't do that. You ask me, then I volunteer. That's how that works. And so then I start having that discussion, and they also have some mental health issues. And they're like, well, I'm going to get some counseling. Oh, when I get my mental health right, then I'll be able to get my physical health right. Wrong answer. Fucking backwards. Physically take back your health, and your mental health will get much better. Maybe you need some more, you know, people that deal with trauma and all. You need somebody to talk to or whatever, but get your physical health taken care of, because that is a decision. Don't eat this garbage and get some exercise and go outside. It really is that simple for most people. Move on to money. Money's the primary means of control in society today. And as long as money has existed, it's been the primary means of control. This is why governments claim sovereignty over money. This is also why in the original formation of the United States, the United States Republic did not claim sovereignty over money. We didn't. We used the Spanish piece of a silver coin as a primary monetary unit in America. And when we began to actually print money in America, to coin money, silver and gold, we put images on it that were not politicians, dead or alive, right? It was an image of a Native American or an image of Lady Liberty. And the money didn't really fall under the sovereignty of the nation. We just took over responsibility to coin it. And the government became the guarantor of the money's authenticity. In other words, if it was minted, you know, at Carson City Mint in Nevada, and you looked at it, and it was a coin, and the edge was right, and it had the mint mark on it, and it weighed the right amount, then you knew it was really a silver dollar. But in the end, it wasn't the U.S. claiming sovereignty. When a nation claims sovereignty over the money, you have moved into the world of fiat. In 1913, we really took the first step of that, but again, it was gradual over time. 1933, we'll just decide that, you know, an ounce of gold is worth more dollars. No reason for it, no price discovery, no market, we'll just do it. 1964, we're going to make quarters out of freaking, you know, clad copper instead of silver. 1971, everything that's left of the gold standard is gone, right? And then you went into full on, the U.S. government has sovereignty over what is the U.S. dollar. Once you have that, you have complete control. It's the primary means of control. Because since I can print and issue money, I can steal value from the person who already earned it without even taxing them. I don't have to tax you. I don't have to send you a bill. I don't have to add a fee. I don't have to do anything. I'll just print a gazillion more dollars, and I'll just take a little bit of everybody's money they already have away from them. Without the nation having sovereignty over the currency, with the currency being actual money, you can't do that. You want more silver, you have to create more value to bring more silver into your country so your people have more silver to work with. Right? Of course, silver doesn't work for that anymore in a modern age with digital transmission. So we have to take it back with something like Bitcoin, which I'm not going to really get into today heavily, other than it is a piece of it. But one thing we need to always remember is the two most expensive things that will be in your life. So healthcare is number three for most households. Number one is housing, and number two is transportation. So those are two places you have to take control of. And there are so many people that today have a car payment that's as high as a house payment. And I understand why. But we have to be more creative in our solutions. Like, we're at a point now with the truck that we're leasing from Toyota. We're about 4 months left on our second lease extension, and we're going to have to turn it back in because I'm not buying it for what they want for it and for the payment they want for it under the financing terms they want for it. We'll either find somebody that'll make us a deal, or I'll go out and I'll buy a $14,000-$15,000 vehicle for cash. And most people say, well, I can't do that because you don't control your money. But I'm telling you, if you don't control your money, then money controls you, and people who control money control you. And you can see this more in fascist societies than any place else, and that's what you have. Years ago, I was at a workshop with Dave Jackie, who wrote Edible Forest Gardens, really great permaculturist, really nice dude. I like a lot of things about him, but he's definitely a lefty. And there's no need for it, but he injects politics into his workshop, and we're talking about fascism. And he said, it's a system of political control. And I said, well, it's a system of economic control. That's what defines fascism. He says, no, it's control. And I said, what controls people more than money? And anything he came up with, it was still money. Well, class division, how you divide the classes based on money. Money is the primary means of control, so you have to control it. Jobs are a means of control. They're not bad, but you better understand this dynamic. It's easy to break free of what's being done to you if you can identify what's being done to you. So I've employed people. And the reason I employed people is I needed them to do a thing, and I was willing to pay to have the thing done instead of do the thing myself. Or I needed the company to grow, and I didn't have the manpower without adding another employee. And when I did it, I wasn't being nefarious, like, oh, bitch, you will work for me or I will take your money away. But in a way, I was. 2 days into it, dude shows up late for work. Come on, let's go sit down and talk. You can't be on time unless there's a good reason and it's not a regular occurrence, and at least you let us know it's going to happen. You won't work here anymore. I know full well when I have that conversation, it's entirely right for me to do. It is not right for the other guy who's always on time to witness this, and the guy gets away with it, right? It's going to fuck up employees. But I also know why it works. If I wasn't paying that guy, I'd have no – he'd go, you know, fuck you, Jack, and just walk out the door. But since I'm paying him, and he has to pay his bills, then he is going to comply with what I ask rapidly. He doesn't have to because he has another option. So how do you end up in a position where if you're going to be a J-O-B person, you're not completely under the thumb of your employer at all times? Always have another option. Be so in demand and so wanted and so well-known for your personal brand that somebody else always wants you. And as long as you don't wear that out, like you could abuse that. If I look at your resume and you've been in 8 companies in 6 years, I'm probably not even going to interview you. But if you have enough of a reputation in what you do and enough connection, then you can be the uncontrollable employee, especially if you're good at what you do. You can come to me and if you don't show up for work, I'm going to fire you. But you can be like, you know what? I only want to work 3 days a week. Or I'll work 2 days a week from home or whatever it is. If you're really good at what you do, and I know you're in demand, I'm way more likely to make a deal with you. You need to understand that dynamic. If you don't, all you will ever be is, I hate putting it this way, but somebody's bitch. You may choose whose bitch you are. You may change whose bitch you are, right? Like, I want to go work for him, and I'm tired of him. I'll go work for her. But you're just going to do whatever you're told, and you'll never develop a separation from that control. you have to identify a thing first. Like for a person who's an alcoholic to recover, right, and enter recovery and break the addiction, what's the first thing they have to do? Admit they're an alcoholic. If you're being controlled by others and you don't wish to be controlled by others, the first thing you have to do is accept that you're being controlled by others. And there's also a very famous saying, and lots of people believe it. And it's because it's a partial truth. And that saying is, it's not what you know, but who you know. You know who believes that? Poor people believe that. Poor people believe that. You know who believes that? The person who sees a person doing really well, and instead of saying good for them, says that must be nice. Must be nice. See a guy driving a Ferrari with a hot wife, and you're like, must be nice. You'll never have it. You'll never have it. What you know is incredibly important. Yes, who you know is important, but it's not the most important component of things. If you know people, if you're connected and you're good and you're valuable, the network will help you in immense ways. But if all it is that you know people, if all it is that you're connected and you're not any good at what you do, I hope you're a politician, because that's about the only way that that's going to work out. You're going to have to be in some kind of bureaucratic or political position. If you're actually someone that companies hire to do shit, no matter how much your connection gets you in the door, once the bottom line isn't there behind what you're doing, you're freaking gone. And you're only going to do that so long before the network itself, the who you know, suffers. There are people I know that if somebody picked the phone up and called me today and said, hey, I'm interviewing so-and-so to be our CEO or our marketing director or whatever it is, I'd say, well, hire them fucking now before somebody else does. And there's people that I know that I literally haven't talked to in 5 years that's the answer I would give. Mike Case, who I worked for at Sage Telecom, if somebody called me for a reference on Michael Case, I'd say, you better get him before somebody else gets him. There's also people I know, I really like them as a person, that I would just say I really can't, since I don't want to throw them under the bus completely, be like, I really can't tell you much about their life right now. So you probably need a different person to talk to as a reference who's closer to them at this point in life. Because, you know, I would use the excuse, I haven't talked to the guy in 5 years ago. He was okay, but I have no idea how good he is today. Because I do not want my name associated with their bad decision, because I do not have faith that that person will execute well. So you can know me and I can like you, but I'm not going to connect you unless I know the connection will come off. I don't have to benefit me, but it better not hurt me. We have so ingrained in people's minds this bullshit and different versions of the same thing. Again, the must be nice thing is a different version of the same thing. That what happens is people make an excuse for their failure due to the success of somebody else. And once you get a society there, oh, bring on the socialism. Why do you think they did it? You didn't think they knew what they were doing when they did this? You didn't think they understood exactly what they were creating when they decided to create a society where people use the success of others as an excuse for their own failures? Or their own, not even failure, just non-achievement. I mean, the biggest problem we have in this country is not really failure of individuals, lack of individuals achieving what they're capable of. The potentially exceptional person being average. And the person with the potential to be at least a solid average being pathetic. It's really ridiculous. And it doesn't matter how much you earn. It's what you keep and what you keep that they cannot take that's important. So there's a lot of people that have a lot of money, but it's all in a 401k plan and they can't really get to it one way or another until they're 65 or 67 years old without severe penalty. If that person had simply said, I want a Roth instead of a conventional, and they wanted that money to do something, you could at least take all the contributions tax and penalty free and go do that with them. So by not having enough knowledge to tick a different box when your employer put a plan in front of you, by believing the financial liar who's probably dead broke and poor anyway, advising you about your money, they told you you would be better off because it would come out pre versus post tax. Your entire situation is worse than life because you didn't know what you didn't know. And you listened to what you were told. There's a lot of people with a lot of money in bank accounts. Very well-known member of this community. I won't say his name because I don't know if he wants me to. But at one time ended up with a state, not capitalist, lowercase, like Massachusetts, Florida, Texas, Georgia, whatever, that he owed, in their opinion, income tax to. In his opinion, I don't owe you any money. He was living in another state, didn't work in that state. They seized his bank account and took his money out of his account. You think that's your money in their bank? Because it isn't. They let you have access. That is access control. That is a mechanism of control. So you have to move your wealth into a format that is as defensible as possible. And we're going to talk a little bit about military war theory here. And it will show you how dangerous the United States is right now, how endangered we are from outside attack when you understand this military game theory. There are two types of societies, and there's really only two. There's societies that have, relative to their resources, a large defense capability. So your defense ability is very high, and even if your resource value is very high, your defense capability exceeds the value of your resource. And that's as simple as you are a thief. You're going to rob a convenience store, right? There's two convenience stores. Inside one of the convenience stores are no people other than the clerk, right? The clerk is a small framed female, and there's a sign that says guns are prohibited at this location by everybody, including employees, because the person who owns the place is just that stupid. The other convenience store, I'm going to go to the extreme to make the contrast value. Same store, same amount of stuff, probably the same amount of money in the cash register. Standing in front of the door of that location is a dude with a tactical shotgun and a security badge. Inside the store, buying a coffee, are two cops. And they're standing in the back corner eating a donut, drinking their coffee because they're on a break. There's five other employees in the store, and there's a sign on the door that says, all employees are armed at all times for their safety and the safety of our customers. What are you going to rob? What are you going to rob? You're going to rob the store with the disarmed single individual that you have to deal with because the reward risk ratio is higher. What the United States has been good at up till now is having such an incredible defense net that even though we are the cherry of the world for resources, I don't think I want to do this. Of course, now we're emasculating our military, pissing money away, building planes that fall out of the sky, talking about building solar-powered freaking tanks and other stupid shit. Now, whether we actually do it will have a lot to do with how fast this decline occurs. We will see. But I didn't tell you that to point out the danger to the country. I told you that to teach you the danger to your own assets. You need to make your assets incredibly costly to come after relative to their value, whether that's with corporate a company holding a company holding a company and insurances and hiding who really owns this company over here and it's basic asset protection 101, or whether that's I'm going to sweep my reserve capital into something like Bitcoin and good luck picking the right atom out of the universe, even if you know I have it. Good luck. It's mine. You can't have it. Fuck you. Right? Well, you have to give it to us. Go take it. Good luck. See, you're creating an incredible defensive sphere around your assets. Having assets that are valuable to you, but not to the state, not to other people. People tend not to understand the value of a tree that produces food, right? They don't understand the value of even a little homestead and the food that it produces. So there's multiple ways to do that. You need to think that way. How do I make what I have, what I earn, what I keep, so well defended, it's not worth the trouble of coming after it? And the millionaire secret to this is you look as poor as possible on paper. you look like you own nothing, if possible, or as little as possible. Anyway, you take that from there. Next is education. Now, I want to make an announcement right now as I go into this segment. Tomorrow, I'm bringing Mitchell Earle on. Mitchell is the CEO of a company called Discover Praxis that is revolutionizing education, and it was part of why I decided to do the subject today. I'd actually plan on doing this show next week, and I'm like, what a great setup for this, especially this piece of it. So Praxis is like an alternative to college. It's a 36-week boot camp. I am so impressed with the product they're producing, as in the education and the mindset of the people that have studied there. I listened to a young man who's a student there talk about it today, and he was talking about moving from a permission mindset to a value mindset. And the way he described it is, let's say you work for a company, and they have a crappy website. The permission mindset is you go to your boss and go, sir, I noticed we have a crappy website, right? And I was wondering if I could make some suggestions of how we can change it. He's probably going to tell you, shut up and go back to making widgets. But the value-minded person will build a brand new website. Beautiful. Everything that you need to do to fix that site in your own time, not when you're being paid. So if he asks you, you can listen, no, I did this on my own time, right? And then you'll say, sir, can I show you what I've done? And they'll show it to their boss. And even if that boss says, we're not going to use it, we can't, whatever bullshit reason, you know, your value in their mind just went way, way up. You're the guy that's going to get the projects and the additional opportunities and things like that. So that's what we're bringing on. We need more of that in education. But for you to deal with where we are today, you need to realize that education should be enabling learning. But what is it? Good citizen training. And when I say that, I mean in the minds of the people that want the citizens to obey and do everything they're told. Put on the mask, live in the pod, eat the bugs. Yeah, that's what it is. It's compliance training. So you have to accept our K-12 and university systems for what they are, both the good and the bad. Every time I have this conversation, people think Jack is 100% opposed to college. You want to be a professional engineer, go to college. You want to be a doctor, go to college. You want to be a lawyer, and you know why you want to do it? Go to college. You want to be a veterinarian? Go to college. If you want to do something, and the only way to get there due to the guardrails around it, there is no alternative path, is through college. And you have the intellect and the capability and the mindset to get through that, go to college. Manage your finances well. Understand the ROI on your degree. If your degree is actually profitable, not just because they told you it was, if you can put it to a spreadsheet, and by taking that path, you'll get to do what you want to do, and you'll make more money in your life, even accounting for the debt you're going to take on and the time it takes and the interest on it, do it. All I'm saying is make a business decision when you're going to spend $50,000, $100,000 or more dollars. What kind of person says that's bad advice? One that excels inside that system. That's who. Like, there's nothing else you could do where you're like, well, what's the total expenditure on it? $84,237. I'm glad you know that. What's the ROI on the expenditure? And somebody would say, that's a terrible thing to ask. Remember Matt Powers, who's now a permaculture educator, used to teach in school. He had kids build spreadsheets to determine the job they thought they wanted, the education they thought they wanted, what the ROI on it was, and they almost fired him for it. It's a sick system. It's not designed to have questions asked. So if you're going to use it, know why you're using it, how you're using it, what your return is. And if all those check off, then you are, because I'm going to tell you, probably 25% of society not only will excel at, but is right for, will do well with, and do well after a university setting. And it's probably 25 to 30% of people. You know, I'll give you some stats in a minute, too, if you doubt that. But here's what I'm going to say. You should only pay for an education, no matter how you're going to pay for it, whether it's college, whether it's trade school, whatever. One, you truly need it to get where you're going, or at least help a great deal by doing it, right? Like, if most of the people in that field have degrees, but not all of them, then you don't need it. But if, like, 2% crack into that field without a degree, then clearly you're helped by it. If like half the people doing it don't have degrees or have degrees in something completely unrelated, there is an alternative. And you should at least explore the alternative before you take the common path that is expensive, one-directional, and hard to change once you begin down it. Again, I know people like my best friend, one of my best friends, ex-fiance, designs closets with CAD software, but she has a degree in architecture. I'm sure it helps. I'm sure on some bullshit survey, she's still listed as working in her field. She didn't need no degree. She needed to know how to use CAD and be trained by the company she works for. She went to that because she hated being an architect. Why'd she be an architect? Her dad was an architect, and she had daddy issues. That simple. By the way, I told him that when he first met her, but he didn't want to listen. Most people don't want to listen. Next, you should understand exactly what you're getting into long term. And here's the statistics behind that. This is straight out of the U.S. government, right? I'm not pulling these numbers from my ass. 27% of college graduates use their degree in their work. They're working in their field of study. You know, at least you can make the case that they are. Even that number is a little slippery. I'd put the number more around 20% as in dude has a degree in mechanical engineering, has a job doing mechanical engineering, right? Not mechanical engineering is a small piece of the job that he does, right? Where he's a project manager over mechanical engineers, even though he doesn't do any engineering or something like that. That's probably not a good example, but that type of thinking. 27% use their degree in their field of study. 34% of college graduates have jobs that do not require degrees at all. So a full third of the people that spend 4 years or more of their life successfully complete a degree and end up saddled with debt end up with jobs that never required the degree. So when I tell you that probably 25 to 30% of people are the right fit, there's the numbers to justify that with. 34% not only don't work in their field of study, they don't even need a degree for their job. How many of them are left at that point? And how many of them that have a job that requires the degree don't really? I had two jobs in my life that absolutely stated flat out, you know, master of business preferred, BS in business or similar required, full stop. Both jobs, I got them. Why? Because I was well known in my field and had a good personal brand. And what they really wanted was somebody that could manage salespeople and write big numbers. And so when you had a track record doing that, that requirement, so had I had a degree, they would have counted me in that number of people working jobs that require a degree, even though it wasn't true. So again, that number is so much lower than the number of people we send, let alone the number of people who graduate, right? Because remember, there's a shitload of people with some college, which does absolutely nothing for you, unless you studied something that actually helps you do a thing, right? You need to learn to do as many things as you can and market your personal brand. When somebody who wants to hire you realizes, like, even though I'm hiring them to do A, B, and C, when I need X, Y, and Z done, this is the person that can do it. You're incredibly valuable. When all you can do is A, B, and C within the box, you'll get a job, but you're going to work for a larger company that sees you as a piece of a part that goes into a machine, and one level above you, nobody will ever know your name. That's what will happen. You can go to that same job in that same company, in that same structure, but if you're the person that can do all the other shit and you take the value approach instead of the permission approach, those people will know your name. You'll often move right past your boss. And when you can't, you develop enough brand and reputation that to move up, you move over. If I can't advance here, I will go advance there. And the way to have that conversation is to already have the offer. Don't indicate that you have the offer. Go to the person that controls your advancement in your company, assuming you don't want to leave, and have a very frank, candid conversation. Not a threatening one, but I feel that I have reached the highest level I can move to in this company and anytime soon. I feel like I'm better than that. And if I cannot see a path to advancement soon, I will have to explore other options. Now, if you don't have the offer in hand from another company, that's a difficult, like, control, right? Money, access, permission, right? All those mechanisms of control are in place. They don't need to know that you're sitting here with an offer letter that gives you the advancement, additional money, everything that you want. They don't need to know that when you have that conversation. And so if that conversation goes nowhere, if they think you're bluffing, you can say, well, I really had hoped that we could come up with a plan. I'm very sorry that we cannot, but I believe I will have to take another opportunity. And what they think when you say that is what? He's going to get his resume on the street, right? I actually just came across an offer that gives me a real advancement opportunity, and I was going to turn it down because I really love working here, but I also care about my future. And since after this conversation, it doesn't seem like you do, I'm going to have to take that opportunity. I really appreciate the opportunity here. I'll be tending my 2 weeks notice, and I will do anything I can to make the transition smooth for you. And then shut up. You have no idea what they're going to say. 50% of the time, thank you for what you did for us. Goodbye, you're replaceable. The other 50% of the time, wait a minute. I didn't understand that's what was going on here. I really don't want to lose you. Can I have a week? Sure. You can have a week. You can have a week. That's how long you have to get back to me with why I should stay. And it's not just more money, obviously, in that position. It's, I want advancement. I want to further my career. And if I can't do it here, I'm going to go do it somewhere else. We don't teach people to have that conversation. We don't teach people to think that way. And there's a reason. It's disruptive. It is not compliant. And the person that comes out of a K-12 or the longer you go, university even more so, master's even more so, it's very difficult for them to even think about having the conversation I just gave you, even if they have the offer. They'll usually do something stupid. Like they'll either turn it down altogether because they're afraid, or they'll just go in and resign, or they'll do something stupid. They'll have that same conversation in a piss-poor way. Here's a piss-poor way. Hey, Bill, I've been asking for opportunity to move up, and basically Sprockets just offered me a really big fucking check and a job that's way better than what I have here at Jetsons, right? Or not yet, Cogswell Cogs. And so I'm going to take it if you don't do something for me. That's not how you have that conversation. You give that person a sincere opportunity to give you a reason to stay. And when they start doing shit like, I would love to, but my hands are tied. Well, okay. You can't. If you can't, I can't. Who can I talk to? Right? If you can't work your way up the chain of command, go take the other opportunity. And be the person that will. Because that's the person that I want to hire. That's the person I want to hire. There's one real hang up to this. There's one real problem with not having a degree in the world today. And you have to figure out how to work around it. That's why I'm really excited to have the Praxis guy on tomorrow. And that is that the majority of people who do the hiring have degrees themselves, and they are under a inflated sense of the importance of it because they did it, so it must be important, especially when they're still making payments on their student loans and shit like that. Now, again, you want to be a lawyer or something like that? Like, yeah, there's requirements. There's a lot of jobs. You don't need a degree, but if the hiring manager has one, they're going to value it. If they have a degree from the same school, there's a lot of nepotism there. And I would tell you the most valuable thing that you gain from going to a well-known school, and it doesn't have to be Ivy League or something, like something with a really strong alumni network, like Texas A&M would be a perfect example. If you are trying to get an interview with a company and you find out the person that you need to interview with went to your alma mater, even if you can't directly get to them, if you could find anybody that you know that knows who they are and can talk to them and say, I'd like you to interview Erin. She's an A&M alum. Just give her an interview. You're going to get a fucking interview. So I'm going to tell you there's actually value in that too, because we have to be honest when we're making that decision, right? Moving on, regulation. This is the most difficult thing to teach to people who have been trained into compliance. There are two types of regulation. Hard regulation and soft regulation, and hard regulation often can be turned into soft regulation. So let's talk about what a hard regulation is. And to understand that, you have to understand a rule is as strong as its teeth. Let's say I make a law and say it's illegal to use a plant for drugs or to plant it or whatever, you know. And it, you will get in big trouble if you have this plant in your possession, right? And I say, well, what exactly is big trouble? And it's you will get a fine. Well, okay. How much is it? $25. And do you have any kind of advanced surveillance system that tells you who has this plant? Not really, but you better not. Most people are going to be like, fuck that, I'm going to use the plant. If I want to, I'm going to use it. And if I get caught, here's the $25. If the answer to that question is we will throw you in prison for 5 years, risk or reward ratio, right? That changes. That, but that would be both of them are hard regulations. There actually is a rule, and there actually is a direct consequence if you get caught breaking the rule. Most of the things used to control you in society are soft regulations. Wear your face diaper. What really happened to anybody that didn't? Now, if they were in a private business and told to leave and they didn't and they got arrested, was anybody prosecuted for not wearing a mask in America anyway? No. They were prosecuted, if at all, for trespass. Since you didn't comply with what we said and you didn't leave, and the police had to be called. They were pissed off that you interrupted their coffee break they were having at the convenience store. And since they had to come over and you wouldn't leave and you admitted you wouldn't leave, and you didn't own the place and somebody else did, they hooked you up and took you in for trespassing. But how many people thought, oh, I have to do it, right? So many things during the COVIDs demonstrated this mass hysteria, right? This mass psychosis of a belief that you needed to do a thing. And then the monkeys started policing each other and yelling at each other. But there's so many things like that. So many things like that. So many people that I have to go to college because I come from a family where everybody went to college. So, maybe you want to be a welder. Maybe you want to be a pipe fitter. Maybe you want to be a carpenter. Maybe you want to be a pilot. You don't need a degree in aerospace to be a pilot. You need a license to be a pilot, and you need to get certifications, right? Does anybody think that a airline pilot is a dead-end job? I mean, with automation and all, it might not be what it used to be, but does anybody like, what do you do for a living, Bill? Did you ever go to college? No, I never went to college. What do you do for a living? I'm an American Airlines pilot. I fly 737s between Dallas and Atlanta and back. And like, oh, dude, you're a loser, right? No. I went to aviation school. I got my private pilot's license. I went to the military. I had military experience. I came out. I got my cargo rating, my passenger rating, and now I'm a pilot for American Airlines. Phil's not a loser. He's got a badass job. He broke the rule. He was, somebody doing that job, I know there's the whole didn't earn it, DEI thing now, right? But most people that do that job, like, they had to be somewhat exceptional people to get to that level. They were probably people that were told, Bill, you're really an amazing student. They probably had teachers like I did, like, John, why don't you let me help you with your college applications, right? In my junior year, I had teachers, like, basically begging me to just do a little bit better in a couple courses and let us help you. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I'm bored here. I'll be more bored there. This is not for me. But see, this soft regulation. And how many things like that are there in life where people think they have to do something that they don't? They follow the rule because it's expected of them. Those are soft regulations. And they do more to control you than hard regulation. Next, even hard rules are often easy to break or circumvent. Sometimes all you have to do is move, right? All I have to do is move from sometimes you don't have to leave, let alone your state. You don't have to leave your county. Do you know how many things I can do where I live that people down the road from me 1.5 miles can't? And they don't even have a government saying it in the classic sense. Like the people I'm thinking closest to me, but it's not the city of Lakeside that makes them do the things. It's their own private government called an HOA. And then when you get into Lakeside proper, then there's a whole list of other things that you can't do, plus the HOA bullshit for that development that's there. And what does it all mean to me? It means nothing. It means nothing. I want to put a building in. I put a building in. Right? I have a septic system. The only requirement where I live to build structures is a septic system. It was signed off on 1978. I never have to do shit again. I can do anything I want because of where I live. I don't even have to charge local sales tax where I live. I only have to charge the 6%, 6.25% that the state charges. Right? My entire business model, my entire life model is different because I live a mile and a half away from other people. Now, does that always work? No, but there's always something that can be done to reduce hard regulation or mitigate it, some way to get around it. You have to think. A lot of times it's just education. If you did this thing, if you did this structure, if you use these words instead of those words, you can get it done. Sometimes it's not even a direct, indirect regulation. Sometimes it's just a misunderstanding. When we did the Permit Ethos form, we're like, we better have insurance. All these people coming there and seeing stuff and, you know, using tools. If somebody gets hurt, we're deep shit, right? Somebody puts a chainsaw on their thigh, we're going to be sued into oblivion. All the partners, we're going to lose everything. So we're like, we need insurance. So the partner that took over getting the insurance goes and tells the insurance company when they say, well, what type of entity is this? They say, well, it's an LLC. And the insurance company's like, no. What do you do? And they said, well, we're a permaculture farm. Like 2 weeks go by, we still don't have insurance. And there's all this angst. So finally we have, you know, a virtual partner meeting on the phone. And I'm like, well, what is the problem? And this partner tells me what's going on. And I'm like, tell me I'm a farm. Leave the word permaculture out. And he's like, it can't be that. Call the agent up. Tell them we have a farm, not a permaculture farm. They don't know the word, don't use it. Instant, here's your quote. It was like $1,300 a year. Did everything we needed to do because we used a different word. How many places is that the case? How many times if you sell a thing, it's illegal, but if I give it away when I sell something else, it becomes legal? Like, I can't sell this thing to you, but I can sell this thing to you, and this thing comes with a free that thing. Okay. Status jiu-jitsu. That same farm, we wanted to sell raw milk. It was before Roy, out of our audience, who's running for ag commissioner there, who's done amazing activist work in the ag side of things in West Virginia. They recently got raw milk passed where it's available in West Virginia. Until that, it was one of the strictest states on raw milk there was. You couldn't even sell it as pet food. You sold it as pet food, couldn't do a cow share. It was like trying to sell opium. We did it. Totally legally. We sold it as a soil amendment. We said the best thing to do with it is to keep it refrigerated until it was time to amend the soil with it. We even said it was a violation of federal and state law to use this product in a manner inconsistent with its labeling. Call it legal. Same product, same customer, same real reason for the purchase. Anybody looking at it from the state would know what you're doing. They also know you use the magic words. The magic words that mean they have to follow their own rules. It's the Matrix, guys. Even the agents had rules and limits in what they could do. Your goal is to be as Neo-like as possible. By the way, for those that never really got the trilogy, because the fourth movie just sucks, right? But the trilogy of the Matrix, the word Neo means what? New. The end was telegraphed from the beginning. New. Neo. New. Restart the whole thing. Anyway, moving on. Understand that many of the soft rules only have power due to the two of the other things we're talking about today, education and false faith. And I'll give you an analogy. It's just stupid, but I'm obstinate on this, but it's how I learned. Somewhere for people that are probably 40 and younger, and it may even be a little younger than that, they made a rule change with typing. You hit a period, you hit space, you start the next sentence. If you're like me, you're 50 years old, maybe a little younger, definitely if you're older. What do you do when you get to a period? How many times do you hit the space bar? Two times. Does it really matter? It does to me. I much prefer to read with that typesetting of that double space at the end of the period. It helps me visually, because I've done it my whole life, break those sentences up a little bit better than just the period. It's not a comma for F's sake, right? But Sony made the rule change. There are people that will get very angry about this. Who's right? Right? It's all based on what you learned, how you were trained to keyboard and type. I'm like, I'm going to do it, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's not really a rule. If you look at any of my typesetting on my website, it's all double-spaced. If I had a job where I was a professional writer and I got paid and my employer got to dictate that, you know what I would do? I would type all my work with double-spaced because I'm just going to work better. I would proofread it with that, and when I was fully done with it, I would do a find and replace all double spaces with single spaces. I'm not going to comply with it. But there are people that will literally fight and argue over this. You know another one? Boiling frog. You know the boiling frog analogy is bullshit? If you put a frog in a pot and slowly turn up the heat, it will try to get out. It will not sit there and allow you to boil it because reptiles and amphibians do something called thermoregulation. But I've told people that, and they get mad as fuck. It will, too. Look, the analogy is a good analogy, but the premise is false. So much of the soft regulation is people that will cling to something just because it was the thing that the way that they were trained, not taught. If you're taught, you'll let go. If you're trained, you're conditioned to respond. See how simple that is? And so much soft regulation is from conditioned response and false faith, which we're about to get to. And we do still have a pseudo-republic. We have a pseudo, it's not a true republic anymore. So much has been done by the federal government to try to do the exact thing they're not supposed to. They have no mandate for, which is to level things between states. We want your life in Texas to be as close to your life in California as possible, which is completely the antithesis of our entire form of government. But it was strong enough in its foundations that there's a very different life between Texas and California. I'm not talking about climate. I'm talking about regulatory environment, legal environments, wages, how much your money buys you, etc. And again, they're trying to flatten this as much as they can. That's why they really got pissed at Trump over the tax cuts. They gave you breadcrumbs. Well, you don't pay much. Your cut can't add up to much, right? But they want your they want the crumbs back. It's funny. It's only crumbs, but they want it back. Yeah? They didn't really care. They cut taxes for the rich. They don't really care. They don't care about that. You know what the Trump tax cuts did? This is not an advocation for Trump. I can say that one thing a person did was good, at least in a way, without saying everything they did was good. I know that's hard because you're trained not to think that way. But when he took away the SALT deductions and doubled the standard deduction, that's actually what gave most of the lower income people a really good tax cut. But what it did do is it made people who live, let's say, in very expensive areas of New York or Illinois or California with very high property taxes ended up paying more in taxes. And it increased federalism because these states had gone high tax knowing full well, the person only really cares about how much total taxes they pay. They don't really care where it goes. They don't think that way. So if I get the deduction for the property tax, then I don't give it to the federal. So, okay. So that leveled the state. So the state could do crazy shit and get away with it more. Again, you're never going to have anybody in school explain this to you because it doesn't benefit the education institution for this to be explained to you. And even if you don't think that's good, you should at least be aware that that's how that works. If you're going to condemn a thing, at least know how it works. Like I said, all these people talking about alternative energy, and you can't tell me what impedance and attenuation is in regard to what that means for transmission distances of generated power. You don't get to have an opinion on this. Not because you're not a worthwhile person, because you don't know shit. You don't know shit. Tell me how this works. I don't know. Then shut up. Don't talk about things you don't know. Go learn. Then you can talk about it. I think that's a reasonable position to have. Now, false faith. This is when you believe there's no problem or that someone will fix it for you even if you don't do anything. This is a problem we have in the power sector right now. Sean Mills talked about it a few weeks ago. The power generation companies are refusing to do anything about the limitations that we have in the power grid and transmission services in relationship to what new demand is coming onto the grid, because they think sooner or later the government will either fix it or give them the money with which to fix it, which is what they're probably betting on. So they won't invest in their own infrastructure because they know someday, or at least they believe someday, somebody will do it for them. Likewise, the person who could go out right now and spend $500 to $700 on a good generator, a couple hundred bucks on some extension cords, and have power self-reliance if their power goes out, won't do it because, I pay an electric bill, they'll fix it. And it extends so beyond that. People will assume this guy was convicted in court. He must be a criminal. Why? They've never been unfairly prosecuted. So it's easy just to believe justice for all, right? People will believe that if you get a public defender, that you're well represented in court. False faith. When they tell you the United States is a free country, when there's plenty of countries with a lot more freedom in many areas, not all areas, that it's true, even though it's a lie. Right? Because you're trained to believe, you will have false faith in organizations and institutions that do not deserve your faith. That is a system of control. And the reason it is a system of control is because you will not take action. The thing you need to do to make your life better, you won't do because you believe the system will eventually just take care of it for you. The things you should prepare for to go wrong, you won't, because you have a false faith and belief that the system will take care of it, even if it's inconvenient for a little, eventually it'll be all right. It'll be all right. How many people have you talked to, if you're in this audience long term especially, about preparedness, and you don't get it, but now that I just said it, you're like, oh, that's exactly what it is. They just figure that since everything's working right now, it always will, and even if it breaks, somebody will put it back together for them, and they don't have to worry about it. How many people right now are dragging their heels on paying their student loans because, well, if Biden's going to forgive it, the more I keep, when they eventually forgive it, it all goes away, I have that. I'd rather go out tonight and have a couple extra drinks than make my student loan payment this month. Even though it's going to jack the shit out of their credit and make it even harder to get that house that they say they'll never be able to afford while they fuck their own credit up. Because they expect someone will take care of it for them. There's no such thing, by the way, guys, as equal justice under the law. It doesn't exist and it never will. There's no such thing as and I don't care what you say. Purpose of the system is what it does, not what it claims to do. If I had been accused of all the crimes Donald Trump is accused of, I would be in prison right now. I'm not saying I'd belong there. I'm not saying he belongs there. I'm just saying if it was me, I would already be in prison. I would say if I was accused by the authority with the ability to prosecute, I would be in prison. If you accused me of it, just random people, no. I would be in prison. You don't think that a person that, let me give you three people. Doesn't matter what the crime is. All are accused of the same crime. All of them have no priors. All of them are in the same jurisdiction, same prosecutor, same judge. One person has a net worth of about $500, cannot afford an attorney of their own at all, has to rely on public defense. By the way, they're all the same color, same race, same age. Yeah? Just to be totally clear here, right? The middle person has a net worth of about $1 million, well-connected, has a good attorney, okay? Third person is worth $100 million, not even a billionaire, $100 million, has one of the best law firms in the country. Who's going to end up worse off in the end? Who's more likely to do jail time or prison time? Who's more likely to get off with a slap on the wrist or nothing at all, right? And you can say, well, we should fix that, but we're not going to, and it can't be done. It can't be done. It's not going to be done. It's not going to happen. And if you believe otherwise, that's false faith. And false faith will control you. Let's compare it to religious faith for a second, but let's make up something that's completely ridiculous. You believe in a magical entity known as Gibbers the Crab. Gibbers lives on an asteroid in outer space and you're so mentally deficient, you really believe this is true. And you believe that Gibbers is going to show up on August 1st of this year and fix everything. How many bad decisions are you going to make? Now, clearly, you're mentally delusional, right? Right? You probably need some serious help. You're psychotic or schizophrenic or something. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. But you have a real problem because you believe in something that's not true. How is it any different if you believe that your government really cares about you and really is doing its best for you and is really trying to help you? How is it any different? In fact, it's way more dangerous because Gibbers the crab is not very plausible. And anybody around you is going to tell you, dude, what? No. And at least since you're so delusional, you think it's going to be relatively soon, a few months out, that day will come and Gibbers won't show up. And you might actually go, wait a minute. But if you believe in something nebulous like government taking care of you, then they just always get another chance. Every 4 years, you're going to vote harder. Yeah. False faith. Equality's a myth. That's another thing you have to understand. Equality is a myth. There is no such thing as equality. Equal treatment is one thing, and at least it's possible, though it's highly improbable that it'll ever take. But actual equality is a myth, and it cannot be achieved, and it should not be achieved, because it destroys the ability for people to find the thing they're great at and excel at it. I am a great podcaster. I do not even feel like I am arrogant in saying that. I've been doing a podcast for almost 16 years. I make a full-time living. I make more money doing what I do than most general, general practitioner primary care doctors doing what I do. I would say that puts me in the top 1% of all podcasters in the world. They're certainly bigger, more exposure, more people. But when it comes to the fact that I can earn a living as a solopreneur, I am a great podcaster. Do you know what I suck at? Basketball. I am a short, stocky, slow, old white dude. And in my prime, when I was cut, when I was an athlete, I still sucked at basketball. And nothing I ever did, no matter how obedient and compliant I would have been to a coach teaching me to play basketball, I would have become a better basketball, but I would still have been lousy. You know, it starts with the fact that I'm blind in one eye. That's why this goes off. Some of you people have to make comments about it all the time. I'm blind in one eye. So that already is a detriment. So somebody coming in to, like, hook the ball out of my hand while I'm taking a shot from here and behind me, and once the person you're working with knows, you know, your defender knows that, well, it's just going to keep happening. And you can compensate or whatever, but I'm just never going to be a good basketball player. You know what else I'm not good at? I'm not good at drawing. I can't draw shit. I can't draw a straight line with a ruler. That's taped down, right? That's a little exaggeration, but it's almost that bad. So some people are great artists. Some people are fantastic athletes. And even fantastic athletes will often not be good at certain sports. The guy that's a fantastic soccer player may be lousy at football because they have hands of stone. We are not equal, nor are we supposed to be. And it would be a boring fucking world if we were. No one would go see somebody in concert because they're an amazing guitar player if everybody could play the guitar equally. Nobody would go to a race and watch the best drivers in the world compete on a track if everybody could drive a car equally and all the cars were equal. We even have races where they make the cars equal so that the excellence of the driver can be seen. Nobody would go see a football game if everybody was as good as, you know, the best football players. No one would give a fuck. Think about things that everybody pretty much is equally good at, like breathing. I know there's people with breathing problems. I'm not insulting anybody. But nobody wants to go see a breathing competition, right? Nobody wants to go see a sitting competition. Even video games have competitions that people line up to watch the best of the best. You can't have a society based on equality. And when they say, but it's equality of opportunity. No, it's not. No, it's not. People that excel will excel in the areas they excel at. As soon as you accept that, then you'll realize, so what I need to do is figure out what I love and I excel at and go after that. And whatever anybody else says, once you make that, that's one of those permanent turns in your life. When you make that turn in your life, when you decide that for yourself, nobody can tell you fuck all shit again about it. Like, okay, that's the way it is. Okay, I'm going to go do that. but you should be over here doing, no, I don't care. Because you know I'll never be really great at that and love it. And so you'll find what you're great at and you figure out how to love it. All right. Next, when you accept everything is your responsibility, then you become compelled to act. Everything is your responsibility. I don't care if you caused the problem or not. You have a problem or an obstacle in your life. There is no one more responsible to do something about it than you. But Jack, I was minding my own business and some guy came by and cut my leg off at the knee. I'm a victim. You know, I really hate the word victim. I think most people that claim to be victims aren't. I would say, dude, you know, unless you're stupid and you went somewhere where somebody told you it was going to happen anyway, you're a victim. And I have sympathy for you and I feel for you. You're the one without the leg. You're the one that doesn't have a leg now. I didn't say you did anything to deserve what happened to you, but it's your problem. Well, somebody should do something. And maybe somebody should help you. You know, maybe there should be something to help that person. But who's primarily responsible for that problem as to a solution? The person with the problem. I don't care how well-meaning somebody. Somebody can have the heart of Mother Teresa and the capability of the most advanced scientist and the business acumen of a multi-billionaire. They still are not going to fix your problem, and they can't. And they will not care about your problem as much as you do because it's not their problem. You care about yourself, hopefully, more than anybody else in the world. We have been lured into this false sense of duty that is so moronic. What we feel to say that I care more about myself than anybody else is evil. Well, you're supposed to care more about your wife and your kids, people around you, your family, whatever. Explain this to you in a simple way. If you are not able to do the things for them, then they have to do the things for you. So if you don't take care of yourself, if you don't, like, who wants to be married to a person who's miserable all the time? Have you ever been around a person and they're just miserable and all you want to do is get away from them? If you're always miserable and you're married, that's your spouse. You have to see to your own needs to a degree. So that you can be for them, so that you can take care of them, so that you can provide for them. It doesn't mean I wouldn't lay down my life to save somebody, but I'm not laying down my life unless it's the only option to save them. Because then, yes, I've saved them, but now they're without me to ever help them again. I'm gone. If I do stupid shit and I end up crippled and my wife has to feed me like a baby for the rest of my life, that sucks. I owe it to her to take care of myself and be the best man I can, and that involves some level of self-care and selfishness in the best way possible. If you don't do that, it's because you have false faith in another system to fix your problem for you. Oh, I can just abuse my health and they'll just give me a new kidney or whatever it is you believe, right? You can't think that way if you actually want to live free. Because you will become dependent. And no one can be dependent and free. You're either free or you're dependent. Because the minute you're not dependent, you have the ability to act as you choose. And once you have that, then you have to figure out what the responsibility is that goes along with that. But you're not under somebody else's control. So you might choose not to do a thing because you realize even though you like it and it would make you happy, it will harm somebody else. That's the responsibility side. But wouldn't it be nice to at least have the freedom to make that decision for yourself? There's other issues, like energy. You're talking about putting in smart meters so they can throttle down your power. They want to get rid of gas supply. I know there's other problems. But you get the shit we talked about today right, you'll be able to live free in an unfree world. You'll be able to live free and not only survive but thrive as all this shit falls apart around you. Because here's the thing. Don't have false faith. It is falling apart around you. It is going to continue to fall apart around you, and it is going to get much worse before it ever gets better. This could be a short cycle of reconstitution or a very long one. You may die, and we might be right at the middle of it or the bottom or on the way up. I don't know. I don't claim to be a prophet. I'm a pretty good futurist, but a futurist is not a prophet. A futurist says this is what's coming, and here's why I think it's coming, and has a logical reason for it. I don't have clairvoyance. Clairvoyance is when you say this will happen by 2028. You don't know that. I don't know that. No one knows that. Don't listen to those people, because false faith can be in people, not just in institutions. Anyway, with that, I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you did, do consider supporting us. One of the ways you can do that is to do your online shopping via tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. I have the same item of the day for you to do today as I did yesterday, because it's still on sale. It's the Anker Soundcore waterproof Bluetooth speakers. These are the ones that pair, so you can have two of them, and you can make surround sound. You know, you can literally sit and watch a movie on your laptop and have surround sound. How cool is that? I use these mostly in my farther out shop, because I do not have AV set up in there. And once I found these, I didn't need it. And I also use them when I'm gardening a lot. I have these big poles on the edge of my garden, and I'll put one up on each pole and put a podcast or music on while I work out there. It makes it really pleasant. They're on sale for $30 a piece, so you can get a pair of them for $60. They have great sound. They're really awesome. And I'll also remind you guys that we do still, I think they still have that Vivor Vaxular that I've been talking about on sale as of today as well. Some of you are still continuing to pick that up, and there's links to all of that in the show notes today and in the video notes below. The next thing I want to remind you about is home food systems. Education is valuable. I have never talked negative about education. I think overcharging for education and building things in education that person doesn't need, like, oh, I don't know, like, you know, 15th century French literature for a degree in engineering is stupid. And it just justifies charging more for it. And taking 4 years to teach somebody what they can learn in a year is stupid. And it's just so you can charge more for it. Talk about the life experience of being in college. But education is valuable. And that's why I created homefoodsystems.com, along with Tom, who is my web guy, who does all of the back end and sets the courses up once I do the training material. And we put together a course called Permaculture-Based, the Principle-Based Permaculture Design Course. And you can take that course for free, and you should. And the reason you should is because never turn down free education. And because I am asking you to consider taking some of the paid courses, why don't you take a free one first and see if I'm any good as an instructor? You can find that at homefoodsystems.com. Again, there's links as well. And the composting course is only $40. Everybody that's taken it seems to have loved it so far. With that, guys, I will check out today. I really appreciate you. I don't have anything starred. I don't know if maybe I missed questions or something or comments today with all cast. But again, one-eyed Jack, bro. I can only do so much when I'm by myself. Again, tune in tomorrow. Mitchell Earle from Discover Praxis will be on. I am so impressed with this organization. I literally altered my schedule to do today's show to kind of bolt into tomorrow's interview. It's going to be fantastic, especially if you're a young person looking for what to do with your life, or you have young people in your life that are beginning that quest. You do not want to miss this one. I have my grandson digging into some content about it as well, and I've told him that I don't ever make him do a lot of things as far as watch this or that, but tomorrow he's going to have to tune into that episode whether he wants to or not. Anyway, with that, take care, guys. Thank you, and I'll catch you tomorrow with that interview with Discover Practice. You out, just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.